What's up, guys? Welcome back to SEC Smoke, where it's no bias, just smoke. As always, it's your host, Jalen Posey, better known as JP in Sooner Nation. And today, my friends, we have somebody that I've known for quite a few years now. I think 4 or 5, just through the Twitter sphere, on the X sphere, whatever they want to call it these days. And that's Maggie Johnson. She hails from St. Louis, the Lou, and is a graduate of Missouri University, Mizzou. So we're going to have a fun time just talking about our two programs today, but I thought I'd introduce you. Maggie, how you doing?
Hey, I'm good. I'm happy to be here. This is like our actual first show that we've been able to get together and do. I know a couple of times Travis has been on my show, and then you guys asked me to come on your show a while back, and the timing didn't work out, but I'm excited to chop it up with you today. Talk a little off-season ball.
Yeah, it should be fun. This is a show where I don't know if you've seen it or not yet, but we kind of get into some things. We talk about superlatives. We throw out questions, you know, that could be a little bit spicy here or there. I'm really excited for when we get into the season, because then it's going to be, you know, kind of no gloves. We're going to be able to go back and forth. I'd love to have you actually come back on at some point in time during the season with some other SEC creators. Just keep that in your ball cap. But without further ado, the first thing we have on the docket today is talking about our head coaches. And we have had so many, and you always do every offseason, right? You have these rankings that come out that could seem arbitrary to some. You had Josh Pate make rankings. You had the SEC podcast with, you know, with Mike and Cousin Shane. They made their own rankings. And so I told you this before, but I took exception with Josh Pate's rankings, Maggie, because it had Brent Venables below Eli Drinkwitz. And it got me to thinking, as we were preparing for this show today, who would you rather build a program with, Brent Venables or Eli Drinkwitz? So I'll let you start. I mean, I have a feeling I know what your answer is, but I want to hear the rationale.
So those lists are crazy, right? You see them. Like, I've seen, what was K-State? Or obviously you see Lance Leipold high up on the list all the time. Chris Klieman was high up on lists. And you were kind of like trying to think in your mind, like, why are these coaches being higher than my coach when my team has done better? For me, if I were to look at it right now, and we all know that Oklahoma is a better football program than the University of Missouri. I don't think a single person that's listening to this podcast would try to venture another direction. Like, we all know that, okay? But here's the thing, and somebody mentioned this in the comments of the section. They were like, would those high up coaches be able to succeed at a place like Kansas? Would those high up coaches be able to succeed at a place like Iowa State? Drink has proved that, and I'm not saying, obviously we haven't made the playoffs, we haven't won a national championship, but where Mizzou was with Barry Odom was pretty bad. Like, after the whole, the Pinkel thing, and, you know, when he got cancer and retired, it was in a pretty bad space. Drink came in and has been, for Missouri, relatively successful. Won a New Year's Six Bowl, you know, won back-to-back 10 win seasons a couple of years ago. Hasn't been winning the big games, but, you know, is competing with the SEC. Like, lost by 3. I think the only 2 losses they had last year at home, at least, were 2 playoff teams. And then obviously on the road to OU, which was also a playoff team. So you don't know really if Brent Venables would have been into the same situation if he would have succeeded. And that's where right now I would choose Eli Drinkwitz, because I know that he can turn a program around. Oklahoma is Oklahoma. You should be able to win at Oklahoma by the name on the chest alone. And I know that there were some rough, it was a rough start for him, but I blame a lot of that on Lincoln Riley. And I'm sure a lot of the people listening to this also blame a lot of that on Lincoln Riley. Like, y'all were still in a great position to be successful if Lincoln Riley would not have done what he did. If he would have just left, you know, went to USC, didn't try to take all of his players with him, you know, do it that way, I think you guys would have been put in a different situation. I think based off of what we've seen, I would pick Eli Drinkwitz. just because I think that Oklahoma should be making the playoff. They should. Them not making the playoffs, you know, and obviously the winning thing. And I think we'll talk about this a little bit later. I think Oklahoma is going to get to that point where they are winning playoff games again, because I think Brent Venables is a good coach. I just don't know if I would trust him right now, based on what I've seen, to fully build a program.
It's a respectable take, and I appreciated the flowers that you threw Oklahoma. That's so kind of you, Maggie. Thank you. The reason that I disagree with you is because while I understand your sentiment with, and I really can't understand it, that Missouri has less resources than the University of Oklahoma, because the University of Oklahoma is a blue blood program. We understand this. Like you said, nobody's going to argue that. And we feel like maybe Eli has done a little bit more with less, and we haven't seen Brent Venables do that. There's two arguments I have against that. Number one, and you already kind of mentioned it, we kind of did see BV in a way do that in his own right at Oklahoma, because Oklahoma was in such a unique position as a blue blood. Like, you don't leave blue bloods. You get fired from blue bloods. Lincoln decided to leave Oklahoma. And in the wake of that, in the beginning of the NIL era and the transfer portal era, he also decimated our roster and took a bunch of people with him. Now, did we bring a bunch of people in? Yes. Were they still talented because we're the University of Oklahoma? Yes. So I understand from a outsider's perspective, or a somebody that's like, hey, well, look at your – I remember conversations during the 2022 season all the time. Look at the blue chip ratio you guys had. Look at this. Look at that. But it doesn't account for having people that have never been part of that program, having people that, you know, weren't part of the strength and conditioning program, weren't being able to build up, don't understand what it means, especially if you're playing freshman. Like, that all contributes to it, especially when you're bringing in a first-year head coach. Brent Venables knowingly is known for his defensive schemes and how complex they are. In the first year, our defense was like, I think, in the 60s or 70s, which everybody's like, I thought BV was a defensive genius, but it takes some time to build that up. And now we see to where it is now. And so now that we've seen Oklahoma make a playoff, even though Missouri hasn't, as you mentioned, in almost the same amount of time, it almost begs the question, yes, okay, should Oklahoma theoretically be making the playoff every year? You could say that. But when you look at the gauntlet that Oklahoma had to go through last year, I don't think anybody would have been theoretically, right, mad at them had they went 8-4, had they went 9-3 and not made the playoff. Now, us as Oklahoma fans, we certainly have higher expectations. But I think even the most reasonable people, SEC fans, were like, wow, that's a tough schedule. And they said, oh, we don't know that you're going to get through that. You're going to be 7-5. And then we ended up 10-2. And obviously, unfortunately, choking that game at home. I don't really want to talk about it, but that's what happened. And so that's my long-winded number one point of, I feel like Brent has built that program at Oklahoma, even though it is Oklahoma, because there was, you know, some extenuating circumstances at the beginning of his tenure. Number two, I feel like those 2 years, and I get it, I get why, I feel like those 2 years are buying drink more time. Because let's be honest, before the Cotton Bowl season, everybody was like, I don't know, he's on the hot seat. He has 6 wins in 3 years. Correct me if I'm wrong, or was it two?
No, he went like, it was like 5-7, 5-7, 6-6 or something.
Correct. So 3 straight years of basically losing seasons.
But we came from that. We had only had 1-8-4 season with Barry Odom. So since 2015, like after all of that stuff happened, like that was kind of the status quo. Like, he truly had to build the program back up, because even some of those wins, obviously, you know, we were playing 4 non-con games.
Yeah, that's a fair point. That is a fair point. I just think that there's a few, and, you know, going back over some of those seasons, it's great, again, for a program like Missouri to do what you guys did, get to the Cotton Bowl. I know how you're going to feel about this, but I'm just going to be honest with you about how I feel about the Ohio State game, the Cotton Bowl game, because in the NIL era, I don't believe in bowl games anymore. You don't play the same exact teams.
But they didn't play our same exact team either. We had two top 100 draft picks sit out. They had one. So, and they won't, and I get that their quarterback left. They also forced their quarterback to leave. They didn't want their quarterback there. They could have waited until after the game. They felt confident going in with this other quarterback who I'm sure pretty sure was a five-star, and he's still playing against Brady Cook. And so, I mean, I understand what you're saying, and we've been in that position before too. Like Tyler Beatty didn't play in a bowl game and we lost to Army. Like, I get it. Like, if you're on one side of the coin, you're going to say that the bowl game mattered. And if you're on the other side, you're kind of thinking a little bit differently.
Yeah. Ultimately, Maggie, I think Brent Venables is who I would go with. Obviously, as an Oklahoma fan, you would think that I would defend him just like you're defending Eli. Yeah. But rationally, I think we've seen Brent Venables recruit better. I think that we've seen Brent Venables as he should. Yes, I think we've seen Brent Venables have better success against a more difficult schedule. I don't think Eli Drinkwitz has ever had to play has had the success that BV had against the schedule that we had last year. And ultimately, I think until Missouri makes a playoff game, in my opinion, I just don't see how you could definitively say Eli Drinkwitz is a better coach than Brent Venables, especially when you consider Brent Venables' pedigree prior to being a head coach. I think that matters too. I understand we're talking about what they've done as head coaches, but I also think when you consider the totality of their coaching career, Brent Venables obviously has that pedigree and he's continued to show it. So I think when you look at it and you might say, hey, as a head coach, they're neck and neck, I would give Brent Venables the edge based off of some of the points that I said.
My last audible or like rebuttal, I guess, to that is going to be, yes, and you mentioned like the blue chip ratio and things like that. What Drink has done, he's done with players that people don't want. Like, and I don't want, not everybody doesn't want, like we've gotten, you know, we'll have a couple of players like Luther Burden, obviously, that you guys wanted, we wanted, ever, the whole freaking world wanted.
Yeah, don't talk to Sooner fans about Larry.
That's literally Luther why Burden. I'm, Luther Burden is why I know so many Oklahoma fans. That's like what started it all. Yeah. But like, you see what he did with Tyler Beatty and what he did with a Division II walk-on and Cody Schrader. And, you know, not only did he go out and like talent evaluate these players that most teams aren't actually looking at. He's had to do that with losing coaches every year because, and I know there's coaching turnover at every school, but, and I don't want to call Mizzou a stepping stone because they're not in terms of head coaching, but in terms of assistant coaching, they are. And you have these teams that like LSU that came in and took Blake Baker, and we had to turn around and what do we do? Put together bomb defensive lines, you know, and we got these draft picks. So I feel like he's had to do more with less as opposed to the name Oklahoma that, and I'm not saying that players aren't talking to Brent Venables and thinking like, oh, he's a great coach and he, especially defensively, and he's going to do these things for me. I'm not saying that, but I think the name on the front of the jersey still pulls a ton of weight and we don't have that. We have to have a bigger selling point than I feel like Oklahoma does. And that's my main argument for Drinkwitz at this moment. And I guess then I kind of want to flip it around to you. I was thinking this when you were talking. Do you think that if those coaches were switched, that Drink would have success at Oklahoma and Venables would have success at Missouri?
I think it's hard to say. I don't, and you can correct me, or at least educate me. Let me say that is Drinkwitz is he more of a CEO type? Is he an offensive guy? What's his shtick?
offensive guy. So he was running the offense until everybody was like, you can't do this anymore. Like, you can't game manage like this anymore. You can't do it all. And that's when Kirby Moore came in, when we finally hired Kirby Moore, which again, we're dealing with a new offensive coordinator this year because Kirby Moore took that Washington State job, which is good. That's what he should do. Like, he's in that position. He should do that as a first year head coach now. So he was trying to do a little bit too much. And I think he has finally, you know, reeled it in a little bit and said, okay, we're going to get this offensive coordinator in here. And it's still my playbook. It's still Drinks playbook. They're still running Drinks offense, but they're doing it, you know, with somebody else being involved.
Maggie, we talked about these two head coaches, Brent Venables and Eli Drinkwitz. We even talked about if we had to switch them, who would do better at which program. And so let's go into talking about these programs a little bit and what their outlook is for the next 5 years. Who do we think is going to actually fare better in the SEC, maybe even nationally, in the next 5 years? I'm interested to hear your take on it.
I feel like right now Oklahoma's set up to do better in the SEC over the next few years. And I think, you know, a lot of that has to do with that recruiting that we already talked about. A lot of it has to do with, again, the name on the front of the jersey. And that's just something you can't, you know, you've spent 100 years building up. So it's just something that you can't really ignore. Now, I'm not saying that Missouri hasn't put themselves, there's this weird like stigma that Missouri's like this bottom feeder SEC school. I don't know where it comes from. Well, because they haven't been that way. They haven't been the Mississippi States and the Arkansas of the past 15 years or so since they've been. And they've been, we joked on another podcast, I'm like, I'll just call us mid, because we have been mid. Like, we've been right in the middle, which is not that terrible of a place to be in the SEC with the types of schedules that you're playing and the types of teams that you're playing. But with the way that Oklahoma came in last year, and I'll admit, like, I think I picked Oklahoma to go 8-4. You know, I didn't see them beating Alabama. Now, we lost at home to Alabama by 3. We threw an interception at the end of the game when we were driving down the field. You guys played a little bit different of a game where it was very turnover heavy. It was, you relied on that defense, and that was great. That's a huge win going into Tuscaloosa your first year and winning that. You guys have already won those big games. You have that experience of winning those big games. Drink hasn't done that yet. He hasn't gotten to the point where he's taking out the big dogs. And you even see teams like Kentucky went into Ole Miss a couple of years ago and did that. And that's why Ole Miss didn't make the playoffs. And, you know, you see these teams that can pull these crazy upsets, and we haven't gotten to that point yet. So it's hard for me until I see that to choose Mizzou to be more successful over the next 5 years. Also, our schedule this year is very hard. Our schedule next year is also very hard.
Yeah, I think that when you look at it, if we had asked this question post-2024, people may feel differently. You might even feel differently based on OU going 6-6. And again, I could have given you just a whole litany of excuses or reasons why 2024 went the way it did.
Well, it's crazy how big your quarterback issue matters, right? Because we've had issues the past 2 years with our quarterbacks, and it's played a massive role in the success that we have had. I think we could have won some of those games, or, you know, things would have gone a little bit different, and you're looking at a whole different side of Missouri. And unfortunately, that's, you know,
yeah,
just didn't happen.
Quarterback, entire wide receiver room, offensive line, you know, hurt. I mean, it set us back. It just did. But regardless, I think when you think back to that, maybe you're like, huh, maybe Missouri does have a better outlook. But then it felt like Oklahoma got back to being who Oklahoma is this year. And that's even with the injury we had, you know, to John Mateer's thumb and everything like that. We still were able to get back to Oklahoma defense as we've known it for a long time, and as Brent Venables had it forever in the 2000s and has brought it back. And now with some of the additions that we've made, we hired a lot of people feel like who is the best running back coach in college football. And if you don't think he's the best, people definitely think he's at least top three in DeLon
McCullough. But I think ours is top three too. So it's,
hey,
which, I mean, you can go. I mean, we've had three Doak Walker finalists in the past 5 years, so it's hard. Yeah. It's kind of hard to argue it.
No, it's a. I think it could be a toss up depending. And again, we'll see what DeLon McCullough gets to do at Oklahoma. But again, like you said, with the Doak Walker, it's also hard to argue with, hey, this guy just had two guys that he mentored for, you know, more than basically 2.5 years, even though he wasn't with them their last year. You know, Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price both went in the first round, and he was their running backs coach. So it's like, hey, you know, this guy's great too. But again, you got him, you got a Hall of Fame tight end coach and Jason Witten that, you know, again, anybody can hate on it, I guess. But if I'm going to have anybody coaching tight ends, even if I feel like, hey, they've never coached tight ends before, that's the guy that I'd want to do it. Because he clearly probably knows a little bit what he's talking about. It just depends on, hey, can he do it at this level? And I have a sneaky suspicion that he can. And so we're adding these things on top of going, you know, coming off of a 10-2 playoff season where we beat Alabama on the road. We went into Neyland at night and won on the road. Some of these key signature wins. And even as painful as that playoff game is to just remember and reminisce and think on, we were up 17-0. Like, we have the feeling, okay, this is who Oklahoma is. Like, we weren't coming to the SEC to be and no offense to you and what you just said, but, you know, a mid-teen. Like, that's not why we came to the SEC. We came to the SEC to be in that upper echelon, to be top five, because that's who Oklahoma football is and has always been. We're a blue blood. So we weren't going to come and just be like, oh, yeah, we're just going to, you know, be a regular team in the SEC. So I think with that and with the recruiting that's happening, with Jim Nagy and everything he's doing, and, you know, currently we have the number two ranked recruiting class in 2027, you just see an upward trajectory. And I think that with all those things in play, Oklahoma probably has a better outlook. Not even probably, they do have a better outlook than Missouri the next few years. Now, if Missouri, based on our last question that we were just talking about, if Missouri is keeping pace with Oklahoma in record, making the playoff, then, you know, maybe you have to start having some of that conversation about Mr. Drink over there and you know, what we were talking about previously. But for now, I think it's clear that Oklahoma has a better trajectory.
Yeah, it's the weird thing about playing in the SEC, and I get what you're saying about you came in to win, like in 2012 when we came in, like we did too. And obviously we had our 5-7 seasons. We lost our entire offensive line during camp. So that first season was pretty brutal. But, you know, we went and played in 2 back-to-back SEC championships, and obviously with 2013 being a little bit more talented of a team than the 2014 team, but you just never know what can happen in the SEC and who's going to be good. And especially with the NIL and the transfer portal now, every team that Missouri has had that has been, I would say, pretty like on our better teams are very experienced teams, are teams that players have stuck around for a while. 2007, you know, we had like Jeremy Maclin and Chase Daniel in their elder seasons at Mizzou. In 2013, you know, we had a senior quarterback and we had senior running backs. A couple of years ago with Brady Cook and Luther Burden was Luther Burden a sophomore, I think, that year. But a lot of the rest of the team were more experienced players. So you just kind of never know now with this whole system, like what players are going to be leaving, the injuries, obviously, what players you can bring in. Anything can kind of happen. And I think that's kind of what is exciting about college football, even though, I mean, some people are going to argue that NIL and the transfer portal are, they do need like regulations and things like that. But it's helped teams like Missouri feel like they can be competitive year in and year out. And it might not be every single year. I think this year we could take a slide back. I think next year we could definitely take a slide back because our schedule is like crazy. Our road schedule is crazy. But if you can keep those players and you're looking at juniors and seniors going into that 2028 season, like, and the schedule lines up perfectly, which can happen. I mean, you just kind of never know. You could see yourself back up there with those other teams as well and not in that mid range.
It brings me to something else that I actually just thought of asking you, Maggie. Why is it? And it's, I'm not talking about you, because you've always been reasonable. You're a good person. But why is it that when we see the trajectory of these two programs and we know the differences between these two programs historically, why is it that I see so many Missouri fans get so bold online?
Oh, because they know it bothers the crap out of you. They know what they're doing. Come on, it's Twitter. They know that they're bothering you. They know that they're getting under your skin. And I mean, it's the same way as a female that talks about sports, right? I know what they're gonna say to me before they even say it, because they know what triggers women on. And it's not about my looks or anything like that. It's about, being a female, like, in gender roles and things like that. Every fan base of you, I'm calling us rivals in this situation. We've played each other almost 100 times. I'm doing it, and we can talk about that later if you want to. But a rival that you've played this many times, you know, especially one like, we're obviously punching up a little bit with Oklahoma. But what else do we really have? Because you can only post the screenshot of the win loss record so many times before Missouri's gonna before fans are gonna say something back. Like, you gotta have some pride. So no, I think that that's a big part of it. I think Travis and I have talked about this multiple times about how fans on Twitter aren't fans in real life. I would probably say Oklahoma fans were some of the nicest fans of because I went to Norman last year, some of the nicest fans that I've dealt with in person. So I would assume, when people come to Missouri, I would hope that they have that same experience, at least if they're hanging out with me or, coming to my tailgate. So, yeah, I think that it's just they know what's going to get under your skin. And,
Here's the
also, we're trying to prove, and this is like a real life thing, University of Missouri is trying to prove that they're not Big 12 Missouri, that they're not 1990s Missouri. I think they've done an okay job at that. Like I said, they're kind of right in the middle. But the only way that Oklahoma fans, like a lot of Oklahoma fans, see us is that way, because that's what we dealt with in the Big Eight and the Big 12. I mean, the later years in the Big 12, Missouri was better, and Oklahoma still did what they did to us. So, like, I can't even talk about 2007. Okay, we're not talking about it. But like, I think that there is a little bit of a chip on the shoulder for Missouri fans to be like, okay, this isn't us. Like, things have changed. The system has changed. The entire college football environment has changed. We deserve a little bit more respect than the way you're treating us. Now, are we going to get it? Probably not, because there is still, no offense to Oklahoma fans listening to this, but they're still an elitist mentality when you're dealing with Missouri. And it's like, I get it. I feel that way about Arkansas. And as a Cardinals fan, I feel that way about many teams. So it's like, I understand, but I think that that's part of it. And then the other part is the trolling.
And here's the thing that I think you understand this, but if Missouri fans watch this, I hope you do. I hope you do. When Maggie shares this, please come on in and watch this, because I want you guys to understand it's really not Oklahoma fans on X. It's not about like we're just bullying people. That's not what we do. Now, we have some people in our fan base that are just crazy and rude. I've had to deal with them for years. Travis has had to deal with them for years, right? We're the resident sunshine pumpers. We always back the establishment, as some people say, whatever. You have that contingent. But the majority of us fans are not. It is when we get disrespected, that's when we get a little bit spicy, especially yours truly. Because, you meet me in person. I mean, Matt, you know me, for a few years, I'm nice. I could be a sweet, but like, as soon as you say something like just upside your head, like I can't let it slide. And Trav has been trying to work with me on it, because I used to respond to some of the just the lowest hanging fruit, the lowest. But I've gotten better over the years at noticing the trolls. But it's fun. You gotta admit, it's fun.
I'm the same way though. Like, I mean, a lot of the time I'll see something and I'm like, that's just crazy. I started not responding to all of the comments, because if I do that, I won't have time in my day to do anything else if I just keep doing that. So yeah, it's, and that's why, like, I think it bother, I don't want to say it bothers me a little bit, I guess, when Oklahoma fans will be like, well, this is not a rivalry, it's so one-sided. Okay, Oklahoma State's very one-sided, and people aren't really arguing that that's a rivalry. I just think if you've played this many times, I do think that there is a combative relationship between our two fan bases. And I think it is because we did both come from, you know, the Big 12 and the Big 8, and we've played against each other so many times. And then also, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that we're new to the SEC and everybody is trying to be like, no, we're more SEC than them. Like, I know we haven't been here as long, but we're more SEC. And then, you know, Texas does it too, and A&M does it too. And everybody's just trying not to be that like fall guy a little bit. And I think that that causes a little bit more chaos than probably need be. But
yeah, Missouri's in an interesting spot when it comes to the rivalry standpoint. I'm not going to be mean and say that it's not a rivalry. What I will say is that I think you guys are just like lower on the totem pole of our rivalries because.
Well, you guys are lower on the totem pole than our rivalries too. So that makes sense. But I mean, Kansas is our rival. I mean, it's Civil War. It's literally, it's Civil War based.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's hard for me to, I'm not going to be like, oh, you's my number one rival. And I would never expect you guys to say Missouri is because obviously Texas exists. So
yeah, well, honestly, I would say, I mean, Texas is probably number one. For a time, you could say Texas and Nebraska were, you know, 1A, 1B.
For sure.
And then you get into Oklahoma State. And then I would say then Missouri will come up, especially based off of how many times we played in different things of that nature. Here's what I'll say about, and I'll let you get to, I know you were probably going to talk about another rival of yours, but I wish, it doesn't make sense because we're next to them. I wish personally that we had a rivalry with Arkansas because I lived in Bentonville for 2 years and my family was there for a decade. And I just the brashness of Razorback fans, the gall of them is unbelievable, honestly. And I just wish that we could have put them in their place. And it's weird. It's never materialized. It's never been a thing, even though we're next to each other. Anyways,
go ahead. No, I mean, and they're one of those fan bases too, that will say that they're too good to consider us a rival, which is crazy. Cause
that's insane.
We're like 10-2 against them since we've joined the SEC and like, it's crazy. But they'll want to talk about it if it's baseball or basketball, but they don't want to talk about it if it's football. It's not a rivalry. But no, I enjoy that rivalry with them. It's one of our closest teams. I wish, obviously they kept us with you guys as a permanent rival. They kept us with Arkansas. I don't know why they gave us Texas A&M. I wish they would have given us South Carolina because we've actually formed a really good rivalry with South Carolina and their fans. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of a bummer that they gave us Texas A&M. But no, I think what the SEC was trying to do was avoid just being like, oh, let's put all the Big 12 and Southwest Conference teams in the same division and make it a little bit more interesting. So I think eventually you guys will probably form a little bit of that rivalry with Arkansas, just like you said, locationally.
Yeah. Yeah. Now I'm excited when we get to play them. That's for sure. All right, Maggie. We know that the college football playoff has now expanded to 12 teams. We've seen that the last 2 years. Who do we think, based off of what we've seen, would be more disappointed if your fan base didn't make the playoff? Is that Oklahoma or is that Missouri?
So I want to make a playoff so badly. I really do. Like, just, you know, just to be competitive, just to say that, you know, we're in that area where you're competing for a championship. Drink talks about it all the time. He was a proponent for getting more games on college campuses and extending the program a little bit, or the playoff a little bit. And I think a lot of coaches were. I think 24 is a little crazy, but you know, there were a lot of coaches that wanted that. Mm-hmm. Based on everything, the big picture of looking at both teams, it would be crazy for me to not think that Oklahoma fans would be more upset if their team doesn't make the playoff. And here is why. You guys are like one of the, in the entire country, not just the SEC, but in the entire country, have the most, a top five or so returning production. You know, you return a lot of defensive players, especially since you got that waiver for Heinicke to come back and play as well. So you return, you're like, this is when we like the NCAA, right?
Hey, I put in work. Did you see? I went to their offices. I live 15 minutes from their national office. So I did what I had to do.
You got to do what you got to do. I think you guys have a top five, and this is a lot of this stuff is according to the SEC podcast guys, which they do a lot of work, and you know, so I kind of trust theirs. But you know, you guys have a top five offensive line, top five receiving unit. Your quarterback play is. You thought it was going to be a little bit better last year. You're hoping that he's healthy and that it is better this year. So you're kind of a little bit lower in the quarterback room rankings and things like that. Defensive line rankings, obviously, you probably have the best one in the SEC. I think that Oklahoma is set up to make the playoff better than where Missouri's at, because we don't know what Austin Simmons is going to be able to do. Now, this stuff kind of bothers me a little bit, because when he was going to be the starter for Ole Miss, obviously a lot of people had him ranked really highly as a quarterback, and now he's going to be the quarterback from Mizzou, and they're like, no, bottom of the SEC. Stuff like that drives me nuts. But, you know, and then obviously you had the injury to, I'm going to say arguably, it's not even arguably to me. He's the best running back in college football. He's Ahmad Hardy. When he had that incident down in Mississippi, which we don't know what's going to happen with him. I do really like his backup in Jamal Roberts. They were, to me, they had almost identical stats. Jamal Roberts were a little bit better than Jadarian Price's last year. So the love Jadarian Price, Ahmad Hardy, Jamal Roberts stats were nearly identical last season. So I do still like Jamal Roberts coming in, but you want that 1-2 punch with Ahmad Hardy. It's hard for me not to look at Oklahoma as an outsider and be like, I wish we were set up like that for this year, because I do think you guys are in a really good spot to, you know, not just make the playoff, but to, again, host the playoff game, potentially get a bye.
Yeah. I mean, it is playoff or bust for us, especially now that we've made one. I think it's the taste of, hey, we need to be a perennial playoff contender, especially now that it's expanded to 12 teams. It's a no-brainer. And that's why we moved to the SEC, because of years like last year, where even though we're not in the SEC championship, or if we didn't get there, even though that was our goal, we still had enough wins, great wins, to propel us to a playoff spot and to even host a playoff game. Now, like you said, with what we have coming back, with hopefully a healthier quarterback, with a running back room that's young and is getting a really good running back coach, you know, the offense hopefully coming together, offensive line being back, the defense being, you know, what we believe is going to be best defensive line in SEC, and, you know, important linebackers back, two senior guys that, you know, were some of the best in the SEC, the back end, the safeties, the cornerbacks, like everything's there for us. And if we were to miss the playoffs, it would be chaos probably in Norman. It's one thing if we're 9-3 and we are like on the cusp and it's been a bunch of one score games, we still wouldn't be happy. Don't get me wrong. But if it's like 7-5, 8-4, and we've blown leads, like we've done these things, man, it just feels like the momentum that we've had from this past year would get sacked. It just feels like that, especially at a blue blood, like it just, our fans get crazy about it. And I would be to this point upset if we, you know, and I'm a reasonable guy, but I'd be upset if we ended up missing the playoffs. Whereas, like you said, you know, you guys have some questions coming into this year. You have a difficult schedule. I mean, our schedule is difficult as well, but it's the front half of it is the more difficult one. We go to Michigan and then we go to Georgia and then we play Texas. You know, that's a gauntlet of 4 weeks right there with a bye week somewhere squeezed in the middle. But then after that, the next really hardest team we'll play is Ole Miss, and then I think A&M obviously made playoff last year, and so seeing how they're going to bounce back this year, that could be another home game, hard game at home in November. But other than that, you got Ole Miss. Obviously, we have you guys, but again, no disrespect to you, we're still trying to figure out what you guys are going to look like offensively. Obviously, defensively, you know, you did well last year. I know you lost Jeremiah Trotter, and if I'm not mistaken,
we returned like one guy that started some games on defense.
Yeah.
We basically don't return anything. I mean, Nicholas Rodriguez played a lot. The way that we rotate in our linebackers, it's kind of like you can say starter, but it doesn't, like, that didn't really matter that much because of the way that they rotated in. Yeah. We did lose a lot in our secondary, but that's kind of okay. I think our secondary is better with the players that we brought in. I think the best one-for-one exchange of Josiah Trotter we could have gotten is who we got from Auburn and Robert Woodyard Jr. Like, he's a great linebacker for – he was a great linebacker for Auburn. The biggest question mark is that defensive line, which was very good last year. So, you know, you're trying to replace Damon Wilson, who left to go to Miami, and you're – and Chris McClellan, obviously, from Oklahoma. Most Oklahoma fans probably know who that is. And, you know, you're – and Zion Young, which I'm sure most Oklahoma fans also know who he is. So you're replacing these guys, and that's the tough part. That's the question mark. I think our offense – our offense has to be better. Our offense was bad. If anybody watched that Mizzou Oklahoma game, nobody enjoyed that game. Even though you guys, I think you beat us by like 12 points. Nobody enjoyed watching that game because both offenses were terrible.
Atrocious. Okay?
And then you added on our terrible special teams where we didn't even have tight ends blocking on the edges. And we had a kicker. This is a big thing too. Our kicker is healthy again because we lost our kicker week one against Central Arkansas last year, which is huge again to now have a kicker back. So I'm feeling better about a lot better about special teams. We also brought in a new special teams coach and assistant coaches from Florida State. So very excited about that. But I still think even with all of that, and even with the way that I think we should be improved, and teams like Oklahoma won't just be able to stack the box because we're going to hopefully have options and won't just have to give the ball to Ahmad Hardy or Jamal Roberts. I still think you guys are set up better to compete long-term into the postseason. Now, it would be very interesting if that game after Thanksgiving, that Saturday game after Thanksgiving, holds those playoff implications. That could be fun. You never know. You never know. We also go to Georgia. We get Texas at home, which, of course, they gave Texas at Mizzou and at Tennessee 11 a.m. games. Or I guess in Tennessee it'll be noon. It's just like, come on. Like, make them play in a hard environment, please.
Please,
you know?
Please.
It's so frustrating that type of stuff happens. But yeah, I think that could be exciting if it gets to that point. You know, you can afford to lose a couple of more games now with the extended playoffs, but you can't lose many.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. We're on the same page on this one, Maggie. I think that it would be unequivocally a huge disappointment should Oklahoma not make the playoff this year. Even at 9-3, I think with the some of the wins we could have, you would still consider Oklahoma to be a fringe playoff team, and 10-2 a lock, similar to last year. And so there's really no room for us to be 8-4 this year. And it's just not something that I think we see happening either, based on who we have returning, or that we should see happening rather. So I agree with you 100% there. Maggie, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for, you know, your takes. Thank you for, just being who you are. Thanks for, everything that you said today. It's been a fun one. I've enjoyed it. Do you have anything to say to the people before you head out? Let them know maybe where to find you.
Well, first off, you can find me on Twitter if you don't already follow me, or if you have me blocked, you should unblock me. Or you don't have to. You don't have to either. But I'm at Maggie L. Johnson. We were talking a little bit earlier, and you're like, I'm a nice guy. Like, you talk to me, I'm a nice guy. I'm a nice person too. I get made out to be a villain a little bit. I'm not a villain, I promise. I'm just, you know, we're all just having a little bit of fun on the internet.
It just depends on, you know, what side of the coin you see. Like, we all get made villains in different ways. I'm like, you ask some Texas fans, I'm the most annoying Sooner fan that there is, because they always catch wind of some video that I'm doing, and they're like, oh, you always whine, and, you know, it's just how it is. So
yeah, you're not gonna change many people's minds, but that's okay. You know, is what it is.
Well, again, thanks for coming on. Expect to have you back on sometime in the fall when we get this college football season rolling. But make sure you guys go ahead, like, comment, and subscribe on this video. Make sure you like OU Insider for all the content that we have rolling out. We got the JP and Trav show coming up, continuing to happen every Wednesday or Thursday, depending. Just make sure you're checking the updates. Brandon and Travis have a ton of stuff coming out, and we always have SEC smoke here. As always, it's no bias, just smoke. Until next time.